This is episode 56 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Everyone, how are you? So good to have you back on the podcast, and so good to be talking to you. Today we're going to talk about how to sell yourself to your employer. Maybe you want to get your first job. Maybe you want to get ahead in your current job and get a higher paying position. Maybe you want to do more important work, more interesting work perhaps. And maybe you really want to see where you can take your career. Maybe you want to explore some opportunities. Maybe you are ready to get your second job or your third job. If you're interested in any of that, you're at the right place. Listen in to my discussion with David, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. And if you enjoy it, please share it with your friends and your colleagues. All right, here it is, my discussion with David Gatte.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mentoring Developers. In this episode, I'll be talking to David Gatte. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. And you have been on the show before in discussions, so I know quite a lot about you. But my audience, who's listening to us right now, they don't know a lot about who David Gatte is. So describe yourself a little bit.
So I'm a human. Born on Earth. More precisely, I'm a software developer right now and a project manager for two different companies. And I was born in Sweden. Then I moved to Italy, where I was raised. And then I lived for a very long time in Poland. And then when I became a little bit older, I decided to start traveling the world. And I ended up in Thailand, basically Southeast Asia. So Thailand, Singapore, and Bali. Where in Bali, I stayed also for 10 months before I moved for a short bit to the States and then back to Poland. Yes. So I've been a little bit everywhere. And most of my life, I was a developer, software developer. I had a history where I became a blogger for 4 years. And at that time, also, I was working on the site itself. So those were times where, for example, WordPress was just starting up at version 1. That's how long it was. And so that's also why, I was building the whole website myself while being the blogger, because, at that time, WordPress wasn't actually a thing. It was just starting. Then after that, I became, a web developer. Then I took a break and became a brand manager. I know it's weird. After failing with that blogging website after 4 years, it's failed. I had to close it and just become again a web developer. I became very passionate to understand why company fails, right? And because of that, I learned a lot of different books, read different articles, watched different movies about this topic, and I became a brand manager because of that. In a software game developer company, and they were doing mobile games. It was fun, but eventually I came back to software development because I didn't like the whole aspect of politics in a company, where as a software developer, you can just sit down, you get, whatever you have to do, you punch the keyboard and cool stuff ends up at the other end. But I missed doing something else from being just a developer. That's why also I became a project manager for one company. And now it's interesting because this also allowed me to understand how to work with other developers when I manage them, and also understand how to communicate over distance. It's a challenging thing, and I always love to try to understand how other people think, and try to read between the lines of what they're doing and what they're saying. So it's a fun thing to do.
So you are a globe-trotting software developer who's lived everywhere and who's experienced life in a way that most of us don't get to do. And
trying to experience more.
And not only that, you've not just been developing, you have dabbled in management and you've done a little bit of this and a little bit of that. That sounds interesting. That's different. But what that gives you is a perspective that a lot of us don't have. And that's why you're on this episode, because we really want to learn from you about your experiences and to see what is it like for other developers who may not live in the U.S., because most of the audience for this podcast is based in the U.S. I'm based in the U.S. But we really need to learn about what's it like for others. And maybe the grass is greener on the other side. Maybe it is a great idea. Mm-hmm. And you're doing something also that's also very interesting, is that you are working mainly as a remote developer. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And so both companies that I work for, like, they are based in the U.S. I have a company in the U.S. I opened like the company like remotely, so like ultimate remote thing. And so yeah, like I mean, it's to me like working. I mean, I will say this: if you're like a young developer just starting, like maybe immediately going remote, it's maybe not the best option, because I think you need to work with people next to each other inside a company to understand how a company works and what you don't like or like about that, right? Because basically, like, the rule is, like, you finish your college, you finish school, you go to work, and you work, buy a house, family, and all that stuff, right? And this is the rule. And always believe in, like, first you need to understand the rules before you can break them, right? So, and this is something that I learned, that I did everything that society expected me to do, and then I decided, you know what, I don't like it, and I want to do work remotely with the option to travel basically whenever I want, wherever I want, right? So even like lately, like I spent a month in Spain, and basically the two companies that I work with, like, they barely noticed that something changed. They just saw like the background on my Skype video were different. I'm like, oh, where are you? I'm like, I'm in Spain. Where did that happen? Like 2 days ago. And so like, and I was like on the plane, keep like coding and doing my stuff. And this is the fun part. It's like, you can literally, you know, stand up, especially in a weekend, and travel for two days, land, and keep on working on Monday, and nobody knows what just happened. And plus, like, I didn't like the whole, having, like, I think, like, seeing, like, managers, like, CEOs and managers, like, normally, like, they don't get that position because they're good people. They get that position because, like, they know how to navigate, like, the corporate world. So they're not the nicest guys. And by working remotely, you don't get to see them and they don't get to see you. So they don't get to see, like, how you react to them. So for example, you're acting in a negative way, they don't see it, right? Sorry, one second. Okay. Sorry for that. And so like, this gives you like a way to work and don't be bothered by all this whole politics, right? Which I like. And for example, to the point that I don't even have contracts with my two companies that I work with. Like literally, like, we work together because we trust each other, right? And so I have other two friends that they have their own companies, for example, here in Poland, and they have like contracts that are very strict. You have to pay me, but this time I have to work by this hour. I need to do this. I need to do that. You need to do this for me and all that stuff, right? And I think it's like a very stressful thing, because let's say like one of my clients doesn't pay me. I know that he doesn't have time, like literally like he's running whole week, like doing a lot of things. And I'm just, you know, patient. The next time we chat, I just ask him like, hey, I would like to remember you about the payments. Like, oh yeah, right. You're right. And then I, you know, by the weekend I get paid. Right. because he finds like 5 minutes to just click one button. And this way, like, we try to understand each other. So I'm flexible, they're flexible, and everything works. And instead of like contracts and you sign this, you need to do this, I'm going to sue you, I'm going to go after you, and all that stuff, which is like, I honestly don't like it. So that's how I structure my life.
Nice. If you can trust people, but from experience, we can say...
Oh, from experience, like, you cannot do it, like, you know, finish college, you can read people like from Skype and say, you know what, you are a trusty guy. That doesn't work that way.
But
it takes time.
Even between friends, I think that, as a general rule, it's a good idea to have contracts. But in your case...
Friends, if I do business with friends, I'm not doing it. Like, no matter if we have a contract or like we trust each other, because that's the worst idea ever.
So maybe it works for you because you are invoicing them or you're billing them regularly. You're not waiting 2 months or 3 months because, you know, that problematic.
Well, I think I invoice them once a month. But you can do it, like, for example, with one guy, we were doing like every 2 weeks, but it got annoyed. I was getting annoyed, like, every 2 weeks I have to already like do the invoice. So I just asked him like, hey, can we just switch to 1 month? Because this is just, literally like 1 month is fine. And he said, yeah, sure. And so we just switch and we were doing that thing. And it depends like how you approach this, how you like, what type of deal do you set up? And it's like, since we don't have like literally like a contract, we can just have a conversation, discuss the new idea. So like, can we switch this? Can we do it differently? Can we do little bit? Can I get a little bit extra money? And you say yes, you say no, and there's no expectation that you signed this for this many years and like you're my like slave right now, right? And like, that's another thing, like, contracts are like, so contracts were like invented because people were like scamming each other, right? There was like, okay, we need to come up with an idea that will try to prevent people from not paying or like not delivering or like all that stuff, right? But over the years, I think like they didn't solve the problem because people still have an issue of paying you, right? Even though you have a contract and you had like, you have 20 days to pay me, it still doesn't help. Like, there are people that still won't pay you, right? Then you have to sue them, you go have to chase them, go after them, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think that's the solution, right? And I find out that, to me, just find someone that you trust and you find someone that you can just have this conversation with and everything works.
I think that's a good idea. But in general, if I want to give advice to somebody who's starting out and who wants to be independent and wants to be remote and all that, I'm going to say that more frequent billing than a month, maybe I'm going to say once a week, once every 2 weeks. That's a lot of work. That's overhead. But that protects you from the chance that, okay, somebody decided they're not going to pay you. Maybe they ran out of money. Maybe their clients didn't pay them. So you're out for, maybe you're only out for a week or two of your payment instead of a month or 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. If you bill them after a month and then you do another month of work and you don't get paid for another month, so now you're out for potentially 2 months of income.
That's true. Like, it depends. Like, you're right in a sense. Like, if I see that the guy didn't pay me after 5 days, I know the reason why. I see that he's stressed out, he doesn't have time, and he's not doing it because he doesn't have the money, he's just doing it because he's overwhelmed, right? And someone might argue like, well, I work for like a full month, he should like understand, he should like take like the responsibility and drop everything just to pay me to prove that he respects me, right? Or like he values my time, right? And it's like, yes, if the world was like perfect, but it's not, and different people react to stress in a different way. So to some, like going to a bank account and click one button is like, it's already too much, right? For someone else, it's not an issue. Like, different people are like completely different. So I can sense when someone is doing it because he's not lazy, he just literally cannot, right? And of course, like at the beginning, like doing like every week, every 2 weeks, that's a good point if you're like young and starting out and trying to understand how people work. But you asked me like about how to work like outside the States, right? So for example, outside the States, in Europe, especially in Europe, there isn't a concept of like paying every week or every 2 weeks. So let's say you would like to have a client from Europe and you say like, I would like to pay you once a week. And the client will go like, what do you want me to do? So, like, he wouldn't know like what's happening, right? Because the standard is like once a month. And in Europe, you earn money by the month, not by the year. So if you ask like how much money you make, you say like, I make, I don't know, $5,000 a month, not like $80,000 a year, right? So that's also a big difference. And so that's something that you need to be like expecting, that in the States that works, outside, not so much.
Okay. That's good to know. So we have options. If you are a software developer who's listening to the podcast right now and you don't live in the States, you have the option of working from wherever you are and working for a company that's in the States, or it doesn't have to be in the States. It can be in any other place. I know there are a lot of companies in the UK, for instance, that are looking for remote developers. Anywhere that software is being built, they need people, and oftentimes they can't find them. So they're willing to hire people remotely. And in a lot of cases, I think the companies think that if they get somebody that's working remote, whether it's a consultant or an employee, they think that they can pay them less money because that person can maybe live in a cheap area, so they have the option. So if you're a company in London, you might think, what if we just open this up and make it a remote position? That way, somebody who lives in Southeast Asia or some other cheaper place would be interested, and then maybe we'll have to pay them less. That's my impression. Right. What do you think?
I think that you're right. And I think like, even like the thing that I, for example, don't get like in the US is like, people should like work more remotely in the US, because like a developer complain, like developer, like employees complain, like, for example, San Francisco, so expensive. I'm renting like a box in the middle of someone's room for like $1,000, like, or even like 1500. And it's we live like five people in a house and nobody can afford anything. But for example, you can literally take a train, drive 1 hour outside San Francisco, and you can rent a house for $800, right? And so, and let's say like you drive for like another hour and then you stay there, and then you ask your boss, hey, can I work remotely? And you can literally like make a lot of money living in the States, but work in a place in the States that is way cheaper. And because nobody tells you that they have to pay $2,000 for rent, right? And so, for example, when I learned this, like, because now I'm working with a company that does access controls. So like all the buildings, when you have like a card reader, you have to like swipe the card to get access to. And we are like getting like gated communities, right? And, you know, I see like what type of clients do we get. I just curiously go and check them, and I see like a gated community in the middle of nowhere where you have a house with a pool, a jacuzzi, all furnitures for like $850 a month. And I'm like, what? How is that even possible, right?
That is crazy.
And so imagine this, like, you don't need to, like, if you're an American, right, you want to work remotely, you can do it in your own country. You can like have a salary from San Francisco, but live in a place where you just life goes nothing, right? And this is also something that people think like, oh, remotely, I need to work outside my country. Like the same also in England, UK. Oh my God, I just offended everybody. Anyway, whichever, like one of those. Also there, like if you go outside the biggest cities, like life is way cheaper. You just need an internet connection, right? And that's it. Of course, if you want to have like a social life outside, then that becomes tougher. But that's the same thing if you work remotely anyway, right? Because there are places like where I was in Spain, there was low season. There is literally nothing there to do, just work, right? But I was able to find like rent an apartment that was like very big, old furniture, didn't have to pay anything extra. I just paid one price, and it was very affordable and super nice place. But yeah, around that place, there was nothing to do because there was like shops were like kind of closed. There was like one swimming pool, and other than that, it's like meh. But you know, it's up to you. You always can decide like I can do like super cheap. I can do a little bit more expensive, but closer to the city. You have options. And when it comes to the pay, right? So let's say like you live in San Francisco, right? You need to get like at least $5,000 to live sort of normal life, right? The employee like pay you that much money. They like on average they pay you like $150,000 a year, like anyway $120,000 only because you're living there, right? So you can afford to have a roof on your house and pay for food, right? But imagine like you went outside, you can then ask your employee like, hey, if you want, you can actually pay me less and he's going to be happier and he will never question like anything from you. Like, you know, like maybe that sounds weird that you're asking for less, but what I'm trying to say is like you make the amount of money only because the place you live in, right? So for example, right now, what my clients do is like they have a very skilled developer that doesn't need like a 100% pay as if I was living in the States, right? So I'm still making a huge amount of money, but they don't have to pay me like, you know, double that for me to survive, right? So you get like a nice benefit, like, yes, you're going to make less money, but you're going to spend less, way less money, way more money than less, what they just say. I don't know.
We get the point. So you can potentially work, let's say, somewhere in the Midwest where the cost of living is, let's say, half of what is in San Francisco, and you can still get 80% of the salary of San Francisco, something like that. It's entirely possible. I know a lot of people, actually, that work in the Midwest and other parts of the U.S., and they work in their companies, their employers are in the Bay Area, and they make Bay Area salaries living in the Midwest. Bro. That happens too.
There you go.
That's because.
But for example, let's say like there is in, right now there is a lot of like deficit of developers, right? But let's say like it happens that there are too many developers, and like company can like pick and choose. If you have a hard time finding a job, you can just move in a place that is a little bit cheaper. And then you can say, hey, you don't have to pay me like, you know, $100,000 a year. You can pay me $80,000. I'm still going to be happy. Right. Then you're like, hey, wait a moment. Like, you're cool. You have good skills. You want less. Let's do this.
Right. I think so. There are several different types of companies. So let's categorize them. I think first category would be the big enterprises, the large companies, Fortune 500s, and all those. Those are very regimented and they have fixed schedules, payment schedules, and they have, or government. Essentially, the salaries are more or less fixed. There's some flexibility in that, but a lot of times you're not going to get any less than a certain amount. And these are the companies that are more regulated. So in a lot of cases, either they have a remote policy or they don't. Generally, they'll not make an exception for you. So that's that. The other type of company is the large corporation, which is not necessarily an enterprise. I don't consider, for instance, Google an enterprise company, right? It's a large company that hires a lot of people, and Netflix and all these other companies. I've met a lot of developers who work there, and companies like Apple and Yahoo and all that, all mostly in the Bay Area. I know a lot of people that work in those companies, and I have noticed that they actively discourage people from just working from home. Forget working remotely completely. Just once in a while, they prefer people to come into the office, and they are willing to pay them a lot of money to come into the office. And a lot of companies that are recruiting from all over the world, and their stipulation or their condition is that you have to relocate. That happens. It's unfortunate, but it happens a lot in those companies. But then there's a third tier company, which is more like a smaller company that is cost conscious. They don't have billions of dollars in the bank, and they still have to put a product out. They want people who are good, reliable, and they do good work, but they would love to save money. And if they can retain developers, that's great. So those are the companies I think will be willing to, you know, negotiate on that aspect. And personally, I wouldn't talk about a salary to start with. If I see any hesitation, then I can maybe add the fact that I can take a lower salary as a sort of to sweeten the deal for them. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, once you have been approved for a certain salary and you've been working there already, if it's not a new job and you've been working there for a year or two and they like your work, they're probably, if they let you work remotely, even at least partially, then most probably, in my opinion, at least in the US, you will not have to sacrifice your salary. But if you see that, okay, they're kind of hesitating, then you say, well, you know what? I can take a $10,000 pay cut for this reason. And maybe that puts them over the edge.
That's true. And I, for example, had two companies that I work with, like they're like startups, small ones. And yeah, like thanks to that, for example, I'm able to work in some sort of like, not sorry, some sort of, I'm able to work in like exciting projects. Because I didn't ask like for a full salary, right? Because I work like in places that I don't need that much money. And that's why like they have like, you know, every employee is like from Asia, me from like Europe, another guy from the, Central America. There's another guy from somewhere else. I don't even remember. So, and this is cool because like the system still works. Of course, like, communication is key, but if you are like are organized and like learn how to discuss thing online, then the system actually works, right? So that's a cool thing that in theory, like even let's say like there is a startup and you want to work for it because you like the idea, but they don't have enough money to pay you like the full salary. Remote work, you don't have to. If you're excited about the idea, you can always say like, hey, listen up, guys, I move here, we work remotely, and you just pay me half of like what I normally get, right? Which would be like more than enough.
Right. So if you're a good developer or you can prove to others that you are good, good is a relative term, right? What I mean by good is that you have what it takes to succeed at a job, or maybe look at it this way. You have what they're looking for. If you have what they're looking for and you can demonstrate that, then you're good for them. Then you have some leverage. Sure. Then you can negotiate. Then you can put your terms in. Hey, you know, this is a great, great place for me and I will make a difference in your company and I'm thrilled to work for you. However, this is my constraint. Can you work with me? And a lot of times they will because they've spent so much time and money to find a good developer. They don't want to just give it up and start over. It's really expensive, actually, to hire developers.
That's like my point, for example. You can make it so, like, if you truly want to, like, find, like, a very cool company that, let's say, it's the startup and they don't have enough money, you can start with a low salary, right, working remotely. And then, you know, after 1 year, like, you ask for, like, 1,500 more. Right, and go like, sure, like you're awesome, we love you, like no problem, right? So it's also like way easier to like go up because at the beginning, like, you know, nobody know each other, but once they get used to you and they see that you're like a very cool guy or like girl, then it's also very easy like to go up with your salary, even though you're working remotely, you don't need that money, because that is not because like I need that money, just because like I'm like, I become like better, so I have like extra value, right? And I want to be compensated for my value, not because like I need the money, because I'm worth the money, right? And so for this, the same thing like happened to me. Like I started very low, even though I knew that I'm worth way more, but I just liked the idea and I said, you know what, guys? Okay, you want to pay me just 15 an hour? No problem, right? I can do it. And then I went up and up and up and up. And now it's like, you know, pretty good. And everybody's happy.
Right. And we were talking earlier about the way people work in different countries. And you're in Poland right now. And
correct.
You were talking about the work ethic and maybe the work environment in Poland versus Germany versus Sweden versus the US. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what's it like to work in these different countries, because if there's somebody out there who has the option to relocate and they're thinking, where can I live, maybe work remotely or maybe work in the local industry of the other country, if I have the option to relocate, then I would love to know, what are my options? What's it like to work there? So talk a little bit about that.
Right. So I think like when it comes to like countries, the best places like they were looking the most is Berlin. It's very active. London is very active. But interestingly enough, like even Poland is like getting to a point where there isn't people to hire. And like they're paying crazy money for like just anybody, which I was very surprised to find out, because basically everybody like went away from Poland like a while ago, like because like they can easily now go to Berlin and make way more money than they were doing like in Poland. They can go to the UK or sorry London like England, and they can move around, right? So now it turns out that Poland is like this like sinkhole, like where there isn't people and companies need those people. So you can, for example, think to come here, but for example, you will have to your work. What's the right word? Not work ethic, but working style. Yeah, your working style will be like very different, because since Poland is like it's a new country in a sense that the Berlin Wall like went down recently, well, not recently, but you know, the country can say like it became like normal country like after the Berlin Wall went down, and it opened up the boundaries to like all the world. And because of that, now Polish people like had this notion that they have to prove to everybody that they're better than everybody else, or like to prove that they also can do everything that anyone can do, right? And so because of that, they have this culture that they need to always know everything and be the best at stuff. So where, for example, in the States, in Germany, in France, or like in all those like first world countries, people like specialize in a topic. In Poland, people try to do as many things as possible. So you're not just like a backend developer, you're like a sysadmin, tech support, front-end developer, UI expert, UX expert, and you literally like know it all, right? And people like, it's not that they expect this from you, but if you say that you don't know something, or like you're not an expert in something, they look at you like they put you in a bad light. And so for example, I had a girlfriend, she was a software developer in Poland for a German company. And they had like an office in Germany and an office in Poland. And she went like for a week to work at the Berlin office because they had to do a project together. And when she came back, she said like she was amazed by how little work the developers do during the day and how much money they're making compared to what they're doing, right? Not to say like doing bad job is a bad job, it's just they're like one developer just works on this part of the project and doesn't know anything about the rest of the project. Or like a task that should take like, I don't know, 30 to an hour, 30 minutes to an hour, like they do it like 2 or 3 days, right? Whereas in Poland, that would be like, we will do like 3 tasks within the same day, something that will take a week for someone else, right? Another example, another friend, software developer that went to Denmark, when she got her like first assignment, she was super happy. She did it after 30 minutes. She went to her boss and said like, okay, what next, right? And the boss went like, what do you mean? Like, I haven't finished. And he's like, but this task should take you like 3 days. And she's like, that's weird because I did it in 30 minutes. And until she stayed there, like she was getting tasks that she were like finishing within a day, even though those tasks were like meant for 3 or 4 days, based on like the developers like at the company that they worked there already. And so I heard like many times over that, yeah, like outside Poland, the work is like more loose. You have more time to like take your time to do your job. And you might think, for example, that you're doing a lot of things, but compared to like Eastern Europe, you actually are not. that's the truth. And it's also like people said, like a lot of people from Poland went to the UK people from there are going to hate me. They moved to England to work, and people like from there always say like, oh, Polish people work very hard, right? Because like that's the default setting that they have right now. For sure, it's going to change over the years because like the more time the country becomes more mature and like more like first world country, then for sure this is going to go away. But right now, that's how it is here.
So what's wrong with calling it the UK?
because like I had a friend that explained me like UK, London, like Wales, and all, because like they're like, he explained like for 30 minutes, I didn't get anything. And so I have no idea. Like the place where they have the queen, mm-hmm. that's the thing. Like, and yeah. They get very like, how to say it, personal about that things.
Right. Well, the UK includes multiple countries.
Yeah.
All right. So the important thing to recognize is that countries have different cultures. And I think everybody knows that subliminally. But sometimes we forget and we look at pictures of a place. Oh, it looks beautiful. Let's just go there. And it's great, but you're going to have to adjust. And in the U.S. also, the cultures are different. So people who live here probably know that. But I have noticed that working in the West Coast is very different from working in the East Coast, which is very different from working in the South, which is very different from working in the Midwest. Every part of the U.S. has its own subculture, which makes it sometimes challenging to work in certain places. And what you're talking about earlier, when you're talking about the work ethic or let's say the amount of work people do versus in one place versus another, there's also an aspect of work which is quality, which is very important. Sometimes I've noticed people finish, or they say they finish their work, but their work is of questionable quality sometimes. And sometimes that's okay, because sometimes you just want to push something out and improve it over time. And sometimes it's not enough because you are working on something critical and you want to make sure that it's also tested properly. Maybe you take time to design it so it handles load properly, things like that. It's easy to come up with an easy solution a lot of times, but it's harder to come up with a solution that works over time, over an extended period of time. It works well under load and it doesn't produce as many errors. And you know that, right? Yeah. Sometimes that's not needed. Sometimes what you need is just to get a prototype out or version 0.1 out and then see where it goes.
But that's what I think, like, yeah, it's good communication. Like, for example, this is the issue that I had, like, lately one with a guy that I manage for the other company. And, like, I realized that he's very bad at managing his own time and, like, picking with which part of the project he should work on. And so, you know, once I realized this, I said, okay, so I'm going to help you out. And we are going to set the project into smaller chunks. And also we had like an issue, like, for example, how we name things, like when we discuss something, right? So, for example, there was a big confusion that he is from Pakistan. And so after like working with him for 6 months, I realized like even when he writes sentences, even though his English is okay when he writes it, they're off because he thinks like in a different way. Right. And so different words mean different things to him. And the difference is very, very tiny. So I'm typing on my keyboard, thinking about one way of doing something. And he's like, yeah, yeah, of course, that makes sense. This is cool. Okay, no problem. Then he goes and does it, and it's way different than I was expecting, right? And it's like, okay, but we just agree that this is how we are going to do it. Like, he goes like, well, yeah, that's what you said. I'm like, right. So, okay, there is something wrong here. Like, please, let's start like word by word by word. Like, what this means to you? Like, he explains it. Okay, what this means to you? Okay, he explains it. And then we find out like the small differences, right? And so now for like the next step of the project, like, we first sit down to make sure that when we talk about a feature, that's the name of the feature, right? And there is no question, and that's how we name it. And there's this is the different option that we can name it. If, for example, I exclude the full name of the feature, that doesn't mean that I'm talking about something else. It means that we're still talking about this topic and all that stuff. So right now, like, we have a better start because we have a better understanding, right? And now it's like he's doing more stuff more fast, way faster, and you can see the progress way better, and everything is starting to work way much better, right? But it's just because, like, sometimes it's just the language barrier, and I guess also how people think, right? How they put the stuff together. So even in the States, you say like South, West, and East, this is way different. It's because probably people think differently, right? They structure like how they think in a different way, in a different order. So that's something that you need to pay attention to, for sure.
Right. So in conclusion, I think we can say that people have options. If you are somebody who wants to be a software developer, or if you're already a software developer and you're trying to see where you can go next in terms of your career, you have the option of relocating and starting over in a new location, perhaps working in the industry in that country, or keeping your job and maybe finding a way to let your boss keep it. And maybe if they don't like it, then perhaps you can offer them a lower salary. You can say, hey, I can take 10% less because of this and this reason. I don't recommend it as a first step, but as you know, as a final deal before they say no, it doesn't hurt, and you will still make better money. And so this has been very, very useful for me. Personally, I'm sure that the listeners will appreciate, David, your insight into the world of software development in other parts of the world. And I think the future for software development is bright. What do you think, David?
Oh, I think definitely. Like, I mean, there is so much stuff happening. We are like, we have different like frameworks, project ideas that developers come up with. Sometimes you go full circle. So we start something new, and then we come back like, oh, you know, this older thing was actually good. So why did we change it? So there's always stuff happening. People always want to build something. So, and especially like now with the whole border issue that we are having around the world, like who should come in, who should get out. I believe that remote work is like, will become like even more important over the next few years, because like, if I cannot get in the country, I don't care. I can still get a job and get paid in whatever currency I like. And you're still free to cross like the borders thanks to technology.
Right. And if you can't find a regular full-time employment that is remote, you might be able to get a gig or two, start your own company, and do some consulting. That's also available. A lot of websites will actually have these kind of remote jobs and consulting or contracting type work, like Upwork. Those types of websites, they tend to have not the best clients, and they're not going to pay the best. But for somebody starting out, that might be an option. For others, network of friends and family and your past colleagues, your current colleagues, all those people can probably get you into the door. And if you are listening to this podcast right now, you're thinking, hey, that sounds like a good idea. Let's ask a few questions. You can ask questions. You can send your questions to David. You can send it to me. My email address is us@mentoringdevelopers.com. us@mentoringdevelopers.com. And let me know what you think. Is there anything that you'd like to for us to discuss? Go ahead and let us know. Ask me questions. I want to see what's going on in your mind. And we're going to have David back again for another episode where we are going to talk about something very exciting unrelated to this topic. So, David, how can people get in touch with you?
I think the best idea right now would be like Instagram. Because if you have actually a question or two, I can reply with a video instead of sitting there and typing. So you can still see my face. And the Instagram ID will be Gatti David, one word. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to have all this information in the show notes for this episode. Just go to the website, click on the link for this episode. And it's very easy to find because it's just the name of the website, www.mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. It's pretty easy. All right, everybody. It was nice having you. And I'll see you guys later. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.